KIOS-FM presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, March 18, 2004, for broadcast at this time. Today's speaker will be Dr. Lee Simmons, the director of Omaha's Henry Dorley Zoo. He'll give us a preview of the zoo's soon-to-open Hubbard Gorilla Valley, as well as some other projects and proposals in the future. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Dale Munson.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our monthly Omaha Press Club Noon Forum. My name is Dale Munson. I'm a member of the Press Club Education Committee, which produces these monthly public forums. Indeed, the public is always invited to attend. You don't have to be a Press Club member. If you've not been here before, you'll see slips of paper and pencils on each table. Those are there for a purpose. That would be to write down your questions for our guest for later on in the hour. So, what's new at the zoo? Well, for the past couple of decades or more, there's been a nearly continual planning, financing, and construction of new and innovative attractions. The Scott Aquarium, the Lee Jungle, the Lozier IMAX Theater, the Desert Dome, the Wildlife Safari, just to name a few. Is there no end to it? Well, we hope not. Due to the open next month, actually, is a new home for some of our distant cousins, the Hubbard Gorilla Valley. At about the same time in April, the person we can credit for these new zoo features will be inducted into the Omaha Business Hall of Fame. Dr. Lee Simmons has been in Omaha since 1966. Coming as a zoo veterinarian, he was named director in 1970. And in addition to conceptualizing and bringing to reality these delightful, innovative features for our senses, sight, smell, touch, Dr. Simmons has brought our zoo international recognition for its efforts in animal research and exhibit technology. Today, the man affectionately known as Doc will share his vision and give us a preview of the new gorilla home. But we're certain that he'll be open to all manner of questions about the Omaha Zoo, so please write out your questions and he'll have a go at them later in the hour. So please now welcome Dr. Lee Simmons, director of Omaha's Henry Dorley Zoo.
Well, the easy way, since most technical things frequently don't work, I'm going to come sit down here so that I can work the mouse and just be a little informal. To start off, we've kind of over the years evolved a bit different way of designing things than a lot of places. A lot of places design by hiring an outside conceptual designer who comes in and hopefully listens to what the staff has to say, frequently designs something that he's either done before or has wanted to do. And then from there it goes to bids for architects, and there's a whole chain of things. And we've evolved into something different in that we do our own conceptual design in-house along with working with a team that consists of Stan Howe and the company in this now John Armconnect, who's one of their principals, is our main architect. In the old days, Stan Sr. was. But we do something different in that from day one, we've not only got the architect that's gonna design it, but we've got the mechanical engineers, the structural engineers, and the contractor's engineers. Now, that all automatically says that we don't go out for hard bids, and we don't. We've got a team that we've put together and we've had together for about 30 years. We negotiate nearly everything. We bid subs, but not the general. Kiewit, Stan Howe and Kiewit have been doing our work for, it's crowding 30 years now. And it's a team that works well together. And this building that we're going to look at here in a minute came about because we had two interested donors, both who were very, very interested in seeing it start and seeing it finish. So we had a conceptual design. Within about 4 days of each other, both of them asked me almost the same question, said almost the same thing. You know, this is a, this is a neat project. I'd like to be a part of it, but if I were a part of it, when could you start, and how long would it take you to finish? And so what we've done is we simply, when Mrs. Hubbard asked that question, we just kind of took a deep breath and said, we'll break ground in 2 weeks. We didn't have any foundation drawings yet, but we broke ground anyway. And so we've been designing this one on the fly as we go. We're going to do the whole thing in 18 months. Design from conceptual design. We had a good idea and the conceptual design was done, but we, from design to all of the architectural designs, mechanical, structural, everything, and build in 18 months. We then did a couple of more and models, and we proved, number one, we were smart enough to do it, we were tough enough to do it, and we also proved we never wanted to do it again ourselves. And about that time, Lamper Nearson came along with this a fantastic new piece of a new toy, and what this toy does is allow you to go in with a laser and laser map a whole area. So to give you a little bit of an idea, we laser mapped the whole valley. We had kind of casually called this for 30-some-odd years, back since Craig was first involved with the zoo, maybe a little bit more than 30-some-odd years, Craig, because I've been there 38 and you were hanging around when I got here. That we had always kind of casually called this Primate Valley, because this is the gorilla building, and this is the orang building. Of course, you can see the big dome up here. The conservation center is here, and the cats are here. And in the early days, we had an old grotto here, which was going to then have a chimpanzee building right here. All three of these buildings were simply rubber stamps of each other. And by the time I arrived in 66, they had run out of money, and so we never did the chimps, happily. And this was the old, going to be the chimp outdoor enclosure. And this is a laser map, a cloud map, that gives you a really good idea. Here's the big aviary, cats over here. This is orangs and the orang outside yard, gorillas down here. And then the beauty of this is that if you've got a conceptual design, you can then melt that conceptual design, this is an AutoCAD product, right into your cloud map. And this was the conceptual design of the new gorilla building, which is now the Hubbard Gorilla Building and Hubbard Gorilla Valley. We've changed it since then, because one of these computer models will do is it allows you to go in and look at things and see if that's really what you wanted to do. This was the old gorilla grotto. We've now completely revamped this. We've got a huge big tree here that's got a hole through the middle like that big redwood out in California, and a bunch of electronically controlled feeders in it. And the idea being is that you would come through the valley, and you would go through the building and then through the valley, and if you're in a tunnel, you're captive. The gorillas are free, and you've got gorillas on both sides of you. As a matter of fact, you can have it, gorillas on both sides of you. You can have a gorilla underneath you in this tunnel under here, and then we've got a tunnel over the top that allows you to have gorillas on top of you. So at one point in the exhibit, you can have gorillas up close and personal looking at you from four different directions. And this gives you an idea. The old gorilla building is here, and you can either come up the steps directly into the new one, or we've revamped the inside of the old one. You can wander your way around through, gaining altitude all the way, wind your way up, back and forth through here, all the way up through the valley, and you can have you'll have animals on both sides of you, as well as exhibitry inside. And we're doing a lot of really interesting things here. We're doing a bunch of gorilla interactives where you can test your strength against a gorilla on a tug of war or with a steering wheel. We've got some windows that will go in that are soft windows. I call them patty cake windows. This is the old gorilla area, and we've kind of tried to depict that we had spruced it up, but we really couldn't do justice to it with this piece of software. We've got a new piece of software that the Lamp's got, but it's totally redone, and you'll wander through, and then from the time you pass this doorway on, it's virtual reality. And the great thing about it is that with a modeling program, you can tell it that I want to look at this at 7:30 in the morning on December 23rd, or at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on July 4, and it'll adjust the sun, it'll adjust the reflections, it just does all kinds of things that are really, really neat and amazing. This is the new, we've only got, in the new Hubbard Gorilla building, we've only got two exhibits. One of them is 45 feet by 85 feet and 24 feet tall, and that's this, and then a small one for babies or a mother with a baby. You can see right down at the end there's a plexiglass bubble. And we're doing a lot of things that are going to be really interesting, a lot of rock work. This morning we were hanging more vines. I think we're going to have probably close to 4,000 or 5,000 feet of man-made vines when we're done, so that there are vines all over the place, and so that instead of our indoor gorilla exhibit space got six times bigger than what we had. And the old gorilla building was a good solid building, but it had one basic problem from the day we opened. It was too small. So, and with gorilla conservation today, the big problem is that gorillas are rapidly disappearing from the face of the earth, and a new UNESCO estimate that was just out says that perhaps in as little as by 2050 they could be extinct for a number of reasons: habitat destruction, and there's a big bushmeat trade that has grown up in selling gorilla. You can buy a gorilla steak or a gorilla roast or a foot or a hand or a head in the marketplace all over Central Equatorial Africa, because there are now logging roads in where before you had to hike for 2 weeks with, you know, a pack on your back and carrying all your goods. Now you can hitch a ride on a logging truck or a mining truck, and the commercial hunting has grown up. And so this will allow us to, this new facility will allow us to become major players on a worldwide basis in gorilla conservation, at least in captivity. Whether or not, because we are doing some things with gorillas in their native habitat, but whether or not we'll be successful, we meaning the whole zoo world, I don't know yet. And I think when you're talking about, it's almost like the cocaine trade. The money is so good that it is probably unstoppable until they get some stable governments with law enforcement. We're going to do a number of things. In addition to plexiglass bubbles, and we've got about seven of them, where you can stick your head in as you do with our penguins and climb into a bubble. We've got a couple of windows that are big S-shaped plexiglass windows. So you can come around a corner and there's a gorilla standing 4 feet out into the hallway. And so, you know, if your grandkids are ahead of you, you can have a grandkid, a gorilla, another grandkid, and another gorilla all lined up in a straight line, because the other side of the S-shaped tunnel, S-shaped window, sticks 4 feet into gorilla country. So we're doing a number of really, you know, fun, interesting things. The patty cake windows, I think, are going to be really interesting. We think we figured out how to put a two fairly small, soft vinyl windows in between you and the gorillas, so that that you can put your hand up and touch the soft vinyl, and have a gorilla put his hand and get tactile touch on the other side. We've already tried it out, and it works. Our supervisor went up. Supervisor of gorillas went up, put his hand on the window, and our big male immediately came up and matched him thumb and finger for finger. And they did a little, not a patty cake, but they did a little, you know. And we're not worried so much about the gorillas. Oh, we don't want a big hairy arm reaching out into the middle of the hallway and grabbing somebody by the tie. But we are a little bit worried about some 13-year-old kid with a sharp pocket knife. So we're putting some stainless steel mesh in this. But these computer models allow you to look at, and what we've done with the model that we've done with this is that we have gone up to every single window in the whole place, walked up to the window, because once you've got a computer model, there are some programs that, instead of just doing a walkthrough or a fly-through, you can take with your mouse and walk up to the window, and you can look up, and you can look down, and you can look right, and you can look left, and you can see what the reflections are in the window, and you can look at it early in the morning and at high noon and in the afternoon and see what the reflections will be. And as a result, we decided we had too many windows. So we took some of our windows out, and it worked better, and it was also cheaper. So between our bubbles, all of the big windows and the S-shaped windows and the patty cake windows and the tug of war and the steering wheels, this is going to be a place where you are up close and personal to gorillas, with gorillas every step of the way. When we open, we will have 11 gorillas on site, and the goal is that we will ultimately get this, be able to expand and have a big, because gorillas are very social animals, and they like a large social troop where you've got a hierarchy in which you've got the big male silverback is the top guy, and then everybody else assumes a role in the hierarchy below that. Although the interesting part about it is that he may be the boss, but he doesn't necessarily father all the children. So some of those little guys are kind of sneaky, as it turns out. We've had that proven to us twice in this last year, in that we had some high-tech reproductive things scheduled in which we were going to in vitro fertilize and embryo transfer to get both of our female gorillas pregnant. And in one instance, a young guy that was not even near old enough snuck in. And in another instance, we haven't determined it yet, but we think our old silverback probably so we've got, you know, Bambio, who's 6 months old and out of the world's first test tube gorilla, and then Rosie is pregnant and due in the end of June or the first part of July. This gives you a bit of an idea, though. you know, we wanted to put one of the big problems with gorilla exhibits that people have done is that the gorillas can be so far away that they're just little black spots. So these gorillas have 2 acres of room to charge around in. There are 3 outdoor enclosures, but yet in no instance are you ever far away. So you're really going to be able to see the gorillas. And you can come from the top down and wind your way through the tunnel and then into the new gorilla house and then out through the existing gorilla building or the other way around. A couple of things, though, that I think are going to probably get us more kudos than the gorillas. The gorillas are going to be really, really popular, and we're planning the top of the tunnel so from the top you won't even see it, because from the back of the dome to the road in front of gorillas, there's a 75-foot fall, which will bring me in a minute to one of the other bits that we've done here. The other thing that we've done that are going to make people really happy is we've got 2 sets of new public restrooms, big ones, one at the level of the cats and one down in the gorilla tunnel. Now, one of the things that we do different is that we design for the animals first so that, you know, our buildings tend to end up as very large and some might imagine as their architectural statements, and that's not really how they happen, because we first start out designing for the building and we kind of go through mentally and make a list, and if we're doing something with somebody else or somebody who hasn't worked with us for a long time, then one of the things that we do is we make actual lists. And in our case here in Omaha, we've done it so long and we've worked together so long that we make mental lists, and we do make lists. First, you design for all of the things that you absolutely must do for the animals. Then you design for the things that you would like to do for the animals if you can afford it. There are always compromises, because the world's not a perfect place and money's not unlimited. Even though we're spending $14 million in this gorilla in the Hubbard Gorilla Valley. And then we make another list of the things first that you absolutely must not do for the animals, the things that you can't allow to happen with no compromises. And then we make a list of things that you would like to avoid if you can afford to, but compromise is possible. And then we take that same 2 list and we do those same 2 types of list, the absolute must, the do if you can possibly afford it, the absolutely must not do, the things that you would like to avoid if you can afford them. And we do those same lists for the keepers, the staff, the veterinary staff. And then we make a second set of those lists for the general public. The bottom line is that by the time you get to the general public, the building is already about 3 times as big as it would have been had you just designed it for the general public in the first place. Now, one of the other things that we've done, I'll show you, let's see what our time is. We're not doing too badly. This is kind of a racehorse here. But I'll show you 2 more of these. And this is a couple of more computer models. This is looking down into what was that old, going to be that old chimpanzee area. And we've got we started out to put a pop-up bubble there, an acrylic bubble, where you would kind of duck down and if you're an adult and kind of duck waddle or duck down and walk through a tunnel and then pop up in an acrylic bubble. We've changed that now. We've got 2 bubbles out there. So you can pop up and the kids are in one bubble, you're in the other bubble, and there can be gorillas all the way around you. And this gives you a little bit of more of an idea. But the other thing is that we've kind of gotten carried away. These models are so effective both in planning and in also talking to prospective donors and patrons, that this obviously we've kind of gone on and expanded it into some things that we would like to do in the future, like as possibly pandas, and a new orang facility, or to remodel the existing orang facility. And the beauty of these models is that you can get you can put in the water, you can get the reflection off the water, you can put in an acrylic bubble, and it looks like an acrylic bubble. And then one of the interesting things that happened is that, you know, for those of you that are old like Greg or Craig over here, Greg, wow, we've got two of them. They're old, with basically the same name. Or if you've ever pushed a stroller up that cat house hill, we call it the suicide hill. You know, if you look at the bottom of the hill, there's a safety fence at the bottom of the hill that's chain link and it's got dents in it. And that's where the strollers and wagons have gotten loose and run down the hill and made dents in our fence. And it's a horrible hill. The hill's been there since I came to the zoo. And it's 17%. And we were looking ahead at the things that we would like to do if the world's a perfect place, money's no object, down the road someplace, of the next projects. And one of the next projects that somewhere down the road that we've been talking about a little bit is to maybe do giant pandas. The other one, of course, is to do for the orangs the same kind of thing that we've done for gorillas, to give to rehab their inside quarters and give them more inside quarters, and then to do some big, big outside quarters. And one of the things that occurred to us is that if we were going to make it work, the only way you could make it work, and, you know, back when I came here and Craig was doing zoo time and all, if somebody had asked us then if we'd ever think about putting an elevator in the place, we would have said that'd be impossible because there's not that much money in the world, and, you know, if you can't walk, you just have to stay on the top of the hill. But we were trying to figure out what we would do for things in the future if some of these other things came to be. And pandas are probably the only thing that are such high-profile animals that are going to be so incredibly expensive anyway that you could think about doing an elevator for. And it was the only way we could solve a problem on actually getting people to a new panda house if and when we ever did it. So as part of our kind of daydreaming and conceptual design, we came up with an elevator tower. And when we kind of floated this in front of some folks, within about 3 days of each other, I had two donors step forward and say, I'm not interested in those black and white bears, but that elevator and tower is important right now. So without kind of on the spur of the moment, because we knew that once the Gorilla Valley is open, there will be no way to get in and put an elevator tower in here without totally disrupting the traffic flow. So we've rolled right into doing a elevator tower that has windows, that is also part of a design that would allow us to have some huge, big outdoor orang areas that would convert the old orang outside grotto into new inside exhibit area for orangs that would be hugely bigger than what they've got, redo everything they've got. I think as I said, everybody's going to love what we've done for the gorillas, and the gorillas are going to love it the most of all, because suddenly they've got a huge amount of area. But I think probably the thing that we're going to get the most pats on the backs for is the restrooms and the elevator tower. And then hopefully if the world's a perfect place, why at some time we roll into, you know, converting the old orang exhibit into an outdoor exhibit into an indoor exhibit, putting up two really big, huge outside exhibits for orangs. But whatever, and I'm quite confident that that'll happen sometime. And then sometime after that, probably, or the pandas. The good news is we think maybe the pandas might happen, and the bad news is we think maybe the pandas might happen. To put it in perspective, to do pandas, number one, you've got a there's a huge amount of negotiation that has to go on with the Chinese. Then if you're unfortunate enough to have the Chinese say yes, then you never own the pandas. You make a contribution to panda conservation in China for 10 years. That contribution is $1.2 million a year for 10 years, $12 million. Then you have to build a new panda house, and then you have to endow it so you can afford to bring up the 50 pounds of bamboo that they need every day to eat. And the closest source of bamboo is probably Mississippi. So we're going to be in the refrigerated trucking business. But irrespective of how soon these other bits of insanity happen, and the good news is I think they'll happen, and the bad news is I think they'll happen. When we won't have our new elevator towers done for the April opening, but by June we will. And then ultimately at some time you'll be able to get on an elevator, and as you ride down the 45 feet to get down to the gorilla, orang, and cat level, you can get a preview of the orangs and their new outside enclosures. You need to have ideas that go out about and be thinking about what you'd like to be doing in 4 or 5 years. I said we were going to put two plexiglass bubbles in with the gorillas. We think probably our keepers are going to hate us in gorillas because, number one, we've increased the inside gorilla exhibit space by 6 times. We've increased the outside exhibit space by 10 times, and we've increased the behind the scenes, the bedrooms, because the gorillas have got kind of huge new palatial bedrooms behind the scenes, and sitting rooms and parlor rooms and with skylights and all kinds of things that are off display, but that are better than what we used to think would have been the top-of-the-line gorilla exhibit, all of which has a lot of glass to wash. And then, of course, the plexiglass bubbles that we're putting in and the plexiglass S windows are going to require not only washing but periodically polishing. And so we've increased the workload, but as long as we were going to be crazy enough to do it for gorillas, we thought maybe it would work in some other things like pandas maybe. But computer modeling is absolutely one of the most powerful tools that we've ever gotten our hands on. Whether you do it from the outside or you do, because we've also done a computer model for looking ahead at the future if we were going to be crazy enough to do a butterfly house. And you would do a butterfly house, an insect zoo, tropical flowering plants, and giant water lilies, and a whole lot of things that we can't do. We had this really great idea when we opened the jungle. Most of our ideas have worked out fairly good. The idea that we had when we opened the jungle was a great idea. It just didn't work. It was still a great idea. We just didn't know enough to make it work. The idea was that I wanted to have butterflies in the jungle and birds eat, and we got birds in the jungle, and we knew birds ate butterflies, but there's one family of butterflies called the Heliconiids, which is the same family that the monarch butterfly that comes up from Mexico and comes through Nebraska, and they eat things like passion flower and milkweed, and so they're poisonous and they taste bad. So our idea was that we would simply stock the place with Heliconiids, because there are a lot of really interesting, pretty Heliconiids, and they're native and they're fairly easy to raise. And what we didn't think about was that wild Heliconiids eat passion flower and milkweed and things like that. The ones that are raised in captivity don't. They taste good. So kind of every Thursday when we went to release our next batch of butterflies that had hatched out from the chrysalises, all the birds were kind of sitting there saying, God, it's Thursday. You know, it's butterfly day. So we kind of abandoned that. And what we do, you know, one of the ideas for some time in the future is that we would do a butterfly house, an insect zoo. A lot of the tropical flowers and flowering trees, and a lot of the things that we were able to do in the jungle early on before it grew up and we got a canopy. So there's, as I say, as you can see, we're peddling really hard to make our April 8 date, and we will have open, and the Hubbard Gorilla House will be open with gorillas in it April 8. Some of our outside exhibits will still have some activity going on in, but by the time the weather's warm enough that we can have gorillas out all the time, why, then the outside 2 acres of exhibits, one of them's already done, another one is almost done, and we'll be working on the other one. We'll be open, and people will be able to walk through the Gorilla Valley, and if it's warm enough and the gorillas are out. But we've also got, you know, two or three or maybe four other things that we'd like to do in the next 4 or 5 years, whatever, if the world's perfect and money's no object and some of those things. So I guess we're not doing too bad. We'll take a question or two.
Thank you, Doug. Yes. First of all, what is your current gorilla population, and what would be the capacity of the new facility?
Well, right now we've got 9 gorillas, one of whom's pregnant, happily. This next week we've got 2 more animals coming in from Washington, D.C. The goal is to build up, we'll probably end up with probably 3 groups of gorillas, a big main breeding troop, family group, that could end up at 15 or 16 animals, and then 1 or 2 bachelor groups. One of the problems with gorillas and chimpanzees is that it's not very much different than the problem in human households. You get a teenage boy that, you know, grows up, and all of a sudden he gets a little bit too big for his britches, and as long as he's not foolish enough to take on the old silverback, then he's fine. But if he gets too big for his britches, then he has to go out on the periphery, and they end up in bachelor groups that are out on the periphery of the main troop, and then ultimately, you know, the same teenager may grow up enough that he can come back in and kick the old man out. Of course, in this country, we've got laws that says, you know, that say you can't bite your kid in the rump if he gets out of hand, or thump him with your elbow and knock him galley west. And in gorilla society, they don't have any laws, and so if you get too big for your britches, you get thumped or bit, and you end up in a bachelor group. So we'll probably, and the same problem happens in with our captive troops, in that you can get a teenager that gets too big for his britches. And that was the problem with our old guerrilla building. We didn't have enough room to then form a bachelor group. Now we would be able to have a main big troop with all of the females and the youngsters in it, and a silverback and the blackbacks that get along and all of that. And we could also have a couple of bachelor groups. So we'll probably ultimately end up with 24, 25 guerrillas. We would actually have space for as many as 30 guerrillas. This is a very big building. It's a very big, and we've got 2 acres of outside space.
Your next-door neighbors, Jim and Judy Horan, are here. They tell us that you have, in years past, raised babies in your backyard or brought them home in the evenings. Does that include gorillas, and if so, any particular tales about that?
Well, as a matter of fact, early on, when we were, when we were first here, we did not have a hospital or a nursery. And so all of the babies had to come home, the baby whatever. So we had everything. You know, we had giant otters in the bathtub for a while, and which is not something I'd recommend, because they don't housebreak worth a hoot. We had grizzly bears and polar bears and tiger cubs and at one time when we raised a number of apes. At one time we had, when my oldest daughter was 8 months old, just beginning to pull up and toddle, we brought an orang baby home, and then when the orang baby was 8 months old, we brought a gorilla baby home. So Marie had 3 kids in diapers, on bottles. They were in all in Pampers and on bottles, and so we had 3 different formulas and of course that's about when Jim and Judy became neighbors and when it was warm, why you put all 3 kids outside. One of the things that we found out was that and again probably they charge you with child abuse now, but Marie figured out if you had a big playpen, you could take them, and you couldn't watch them, because Heather was pretty good about staying behind the fence. She wasn't very athletic compared to the gorilla and orang, but the gorillas and orangs were all over and up on the fence and everywhere. So you just take a big playpen, throw all 3 kids in the playpen, turn it upside down, and put a couple of cement blocks on it, and you don't have to watch them anymore. And they'd probably get you for child abuse on that anymore. But yeah.
Your daughter turned out just fine, I assume.
Yeah, well, she's a veterinary. She's a veterinary pathologist, actually doing a fellowship in exotic animal pathology. So I think so.
Do your benefactors, donors, ever come to you with ideas that of things they would like to underwrite?
Well, as a matter of fact, they do. When we were doing the Scott Aquarium, we really originally started out, and the idea, because I had always, among other things, had a fascination for fish and had been acting curator of an aquarium in Ohio along at the Columbus Zoo. And so when we first started doing the aquarium and designing the aquarium, it was simply as an aquarium. And the Scott said, but, you know, couldn't we have penguins? And I kind of said, you know, your original knee-jerk is, well, this is an aquarium. And then I thought about it a minute and said, why not? And so that's how the penguins ended up in the Scott Aquarium, which, you know, have been immensely popular. The only bad thing if you're a benefactor and you come to us with an idea, and we're willing to make almost any idea happy happen. It's just ideas. An idea like penguins gets pretty expensive, but then you know, but then ideas like pandas get pretty expensive.
Are you at liberty to say who your largest benefactor might be for the Henry Dorley Zoo?
Not if I intend to keep everybody happy and keep getting benefactors. I mean, we've got a number of benefactors, and if we had our way, we would have every benefactor identified in big bronze letters. But the interesting thing is that I would say probably close to half of our benefactors are kind of quiet folks, and there's a small thing called the Golden Rule, and in some things like that, he who has the gold makes the rules. So, you know, if any of you folks out there have got a, you know, $10 or $15 million that you'd like to contribute towards pandas, we'll give you your choice. We can put your name up, or we can just be quiet about it.
What would be your goal as to the number of pandas if this comes to pass, and I should say when it comes to pass?
Well, the kind of the rules by which we're playing are, is that they, you know, you never own them. They loan them to you. They come for on a 10-year breeding loan, and you never own them. And, you know, one of our goals would be to breed them and produce offspring, as San Diego has just done. And they've had two babies born, and the first baby, just a young panda, just went back to China when she was 4 years old. So the offspring, unlike if, you know, if we had a, if the Bronx Zoo loans us a gorilla, then half of the offspring are ours and half of the offspring are theirs. With pandas, all of the offspring belong to China. And, you know, what we're simply hoping to avoid, if this thing happens, is that we don't have to pay extra money when a baby's born.
Getting back to financing again, what is the city of Omaha's contribution to the zoo on an annual basis?
Well, on an annual basis, the city contributes, it rounded off, about 5%, a little under 5% of our operating budget. There was a zoo in Omaha since 1895. Which makes it one of the oldest zoos around. Then about 1965, they began to build the Henry Dorley Zoo, and there was a contract with the city that gave the Zoological Society the responsibility of raising the money and building and maintaining the park and the zoo. And in the original year, the first year I was here, the city's contribution was 100% of our operating budget. And the next year it was 95%. And then as the zoo grew, the percentage that the city contributed got less. So that there was a period of time when the city contributed 75% of our operating budget. And then there was a 10-year period there, or 10 or 11 years, where the city's contribution represented 65% of our operating budget. But, you know, we're growing at a greater rate than the city's budget. So right now, this year, the city's contributing for our towards operations about 5%, and the rest of it comes from earned income, from memberships and from endowment, and then all of our capital funds have come from private donations. And just in the period of time that I've been here, it's about $160 million in private donations that have built what you've got to see down there now. And we're, you know, it looks like we're on the hook for, you know, well, if if all of the things that we've kind of got on the drawing boards happen, we're on the hook to find angels for about another 60 million. I said 150 or 60 million, we got it. We probably would be on the hook for another 60 million if there are angels out there.
And these funds have been coming to the zoo without arm wrestling on your part? Or has there been a certain amount of twisting?
I'm not saying we arm twist, but you try to be persuasive. If you, you know, the great thing, Omaha is really a unique city in that I think probably it supports its institutions, whether it's the zoo or Joslin or a number of things, on a percentage basis better. I mean, there are New York and other, there are places, cities that are so much bigger that have much more total wealth, but as a percentage of the population, the Omaha community is really pretty remarkable. And we kind of have a our golden rule too. You know, when we start gently arm twisting or trying to persuade a donor, you can't really say to a donor, this is what I want you to, you know, support. You have to be lucky enough to find a project that lights the donor's eyes up. And so that's why we always usually have 15 or 16 or 18 projects with, you know, four or five of them on the drawing board so that we can see. And then we keep throwing projects in the air until the donor's eyes light up. And so we have a master plan, kind of, but it's not a 1-2-3 rigid master plan. We've got things that we would like to do. And then when we can make a donor's eyes light up, that's our next project.
I'm going to combine these two questions. Do you wish that your zoo grounds were any larger, and do you have plans for expansion? Also, this writer says, I don't think most people outside Omaha realize that our zoo is one of the best in the United States, and where does it rank among those who rate zoo facilities in this country?
Well, you'd always like to have maybe a little bit more room, but we're not in danger of running out of space in the near term. And we do have some other land that's not inside our fence. Right now, the zoo has been, for the last 12, 13 years, has been consistently ranked in the top grouping of zoos whenever somebody does a ranking. And there's a top 10 ranking. There's one group that does a top 8 ranking, and there's one that does a top 12. Mostly people do top 10 rankings, and so every time that there has been a ranking in the last 12 years, we have been in the top ranking. The ranking that we really like is there are a couple that do top 5, and we've been in the top 5 consistently. So when you're in the top 5, that means that, you know, you're in a group that's very elite. And then a number of years back, not too many years back though, Disney did a ranking of family-friendly places in which they have their Family Fun magazine, and in which everybody that belongs, kind of like a membership, and everybody that has gone to a Disney park has automatically kind of is a part of that, and they let everybody vote, and they very foolishly didn't say, well, you can only vote, you can only compare Disney with these things and whatever. So they just, the first time around, they threw that open so that everybody that had been there could vote. And that year we beat out both Orlando and Disney in California. They changed the format. Now, to their credit, they published it, because we're out in the middle of the country and we're really not competition. But the folks that had been to Omaha ranked us as far as a friendly place and as a family place higher than they ranked Orlando. And we thought that was great. They didn't think it was great, but they published it anyway. And since then, You get to vote on how well, every year Disney lets you vote on how well, you know, what you think of Omaha. But Omaha only gets compared to the things in the middle of the country, and they don't get it. So, yeah, so we were happy. We're still happy.
What can you tell us about the current status of the National Zoo? What success are they having in solving their problems?
Well, I think they are solving. I mean, the National Zoo, unfortunately, and we've had a long, long-standing association with the National Zoo. A lot of their early research in reproduction and in genetics was actually done in Omaha, because in those days, their veterinary staff and their research staff was not allowed to, they weren't allowed to touch live animals at the National Zoo. So a lot of the early research, if you go back and look at the early reproductive work and the early genetics work, our names are on it. The work was done here, and we were part of the team. The National Zoo, unfortunately, suffers from being the National Zoo. It's government run. It is a bureaucracy in which all of the employees are civil service, in which an employee could 6 months after they're hired on turn into absolutely the laziest or the worst employee that you could ever imagine, and there's nothing that they can do about it. And so over the years, they have evolved into, like much of Washington, D.C., a huge bureaucracy. At one time, they had over 50 policemen on their staff, simply because that's what it took to do security in a bureaucracy. And so they basically haven't been able to manage. I mean, their big problem, and this is not just a problem with the National Zoo, which is an arm of the Smithsonian, but you can go and hear the same kind of stories within a lot of the other Smithsonian museums, and you can go to almost any department federal government, we could get down and dirty and talk about state governments, or if you talk about a city government, you'd be probably talking about Chicago, because Omaha surely doesn't run that way. But governmental bureaucracies don't run well and not efficient. What's happening is that with all of this shakeup, and one of the problems is because of this bureaucracy and all, they ended up hiring a new zoo director who basically had no appreciable zoo experience and who had no recognizable or appreciable management or people skills. So, and it's all about management, and it's all about people skills and political skills. But what's happened is that the shakeup has been good. The National Academy of Sciences has come in and done an interim report. They've got a final report out. There's been a substantial amount of money allocated to go in and fix things. And there is a shakeup underway. In the National Zoo's case, if you've got a senior staff member who is at 180 degrees to the mission of your institution, there's not a lot you can do about it. So that one of the things that they've done is they've put in a buyout. They put in a buyout things, and so they have managed their. They're changing the structure of their staff by simply making it very, very advantageous to retire.
One final question, and this, again, it goes outside of the city. Early on, you mentioned Columbus, and you can answer this in one word, perhaps. When we see Jack Hanna on TV, he appears to be pretty loosey-goosey. Is he that way in person?
Jack's a nice guy. We're good friends, but Jack didn't come up through the ranks as an animal guy. Jack didn't come up through the ranks as a zoologist. Jack's a really nice guy. He's done a huge, you know, he's been a hugely beneficial to the Columbus Zoo and as a zoo spokesman altogether. But he used to make us cringe early on when he would just simply say, "I don't know that. Shouldn't ask me questions, technical questions. I don't know that." So, you know, the good part was he's always been very honest about the fact that basically Jack is a tremendous PR guy and has done a huge amount of good for Columbus, and he's never made any bones about having come up through the ranks as a zoologist. And he's a good guy.
Well, I think we're all set to head for our zoo, and our sincere thanks to Dr. Lee Simmons and his never-ending vision and energy for the Henry Dorley Zoo and its members. A thanks to Bob Cote and KIOS for the delayed broadcast of these forums. Thanks to you for attending and listening. And again, many thanks to Doc Simmons and all he's done for wildlife and for Omaha. We're now adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's guest speaker was Dr. Lee Simmons, the director of Omaha's Henry Dorley Zoo. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, March 18th, 2004, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Dale Munson for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. If you'd like to attend future forums, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete noon forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.